From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 Chai FM.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the show on this Monday morning. Hope you are having a great day out there. It is already now December. Can you believe it?
As Vusi would say, "Ke December," yeah. Vusi, is that, am I pronouncing it correctly? Yeah. Okay. So you know that the holiday times are coming. You will have noticed I referenced Vusi. He's in the studio today instead of Craig. Craig taking a bit of a break off for today. Maybe it's for December. I don't know, but it doesn't matter because we've got a great show lined up for you as we always do on a Monday morning. We're going to be starting off with a variety of topics that are of importance and interest. On the current affairs side, not much culture in the show today. Later on at 22, as we always do, we are going to be speaking to Rob Hutchinson from Dear South Africa to find out what is going on in Parliament and surrounds. And then we're going to be going through, in the run-up to that, a number of different issues that are affecting our world and our city and our country so that you can be more informed about what is going on. And so what are those? So we're going to be discussing a few things. The first one, or one that will come up, one of the lighter items, is the issue of drones. So we're seeing a lot of drones around and for all sorts of things, from photography to mapping to saving rhinos. But of course, drones come with a problem in that they are in the air and air traffic control is an issue. So we're going to be looking at the role of multiple systems in making sure that drones can fly safely. Particularly, they're testing this out in Israel at the moment because civilian drones are now competing with military drones in the skies over Israel, given the war. And we're going to be looking at a project there that actually worked on how do you make those things coalesce. So that's one issue. Then we're going to be talking about the issue of water. Now, we're seeing water, a kind of day zero type discourse rising up into the South African discussion. We're going to be finding out what is going on and why, and what is causing some of our water issues, with a report that has been done on that. And we're also going to be talking in a few minutes about South Africa's foreign policy choices, which are now coming home to roost. Donald Trump is going to be the president of America in about a month. And he's already signaling some of the issues that are going on. And connected to that is some of the international issues surrounding Israel in the international arena. And they're connected in this particular instance. So we are going to be dealing with these questions today on the show. And let's actually start with the question of foreign policy and what is going on with that in regards to how South Africa is operating in the country and the world. And so what we found is that Donald Trump is coming in a month, and as a result, he's starting to retail the kind of way in which he's going to be dealing with countries from around the world. And he started with Mexico, he's starting with Canada, and a lot of it has to do with this idea of tariffs and trade. And so Trump has been kind of threatening a lot of countries. It started sort of with China, but then also looking at, as I said, others like Mexico and Canada, where there is a free trade agreement. And it's to do with trade, but also to do with borders and migrants. So you've seen, we're used to the issue of Mexico being a place where lots of migrants cross over the border illegally, but apparently that's been happening in Canada as well. And of course, in typical Trump style, what he has been doing is actually tweeting his way through this problem. and basically threatening countries that as soon as he gets in, he's going to be raising tariffs on different countries and their trade on different things. Now, bear in mind, like, for example, Mexico has a $1 trillion trade relationship with America. It kind of makes sense. They're connected as a very long border in the south. It's basically America's only southern neighbor. And so as a result, if Trump was to actually put up some of these tariffs and increase the cost of goods coming into the country via importation, that would obviously do a lot of damage to Mexico's economy, but it would also raise the prices in America considerably, especially if he did it across the board, which is sort of kind of what he's suggesting, that he's going to put like 10% trade tariffs up across everything. So it would be a bit of a gamble. And so what you've seen is in the past when he sort of done this the last time that he was the president, he threatens this tariff. The other countries react in some way, sometimes more strongly, sometimes less. Bear in mind, we've got a Mexican government in this instance, which is very, very left-wing and isn't going to be happy with its northern neighbor acting like this. You've got a liberal government in Canada where Justin Trudeau hasn't been the most necessarily effective person when it's come to some of the governance. And so those neighbors are concerns, and they're trying to now negotiate Donald Trump, who's not always very polite and predictable, into how they are going to continue to run their economies. So that's the context. The question is, what does it mean for us? Well, as part of his tweet storms that he's starting to put out, Donald Trump put out a tweet yesterday talking about BRICS countries in particular. So that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and with the S is South Africa. And what he was saying in the tweet was that he doesn't want to see BRICS trying to create an alternative currency. So there was a question around creating a BRICS currency, which would sort of be for the internal trading of those countries. A lot of it has not necessarily been taken very seriously, even by our own government. They haven't been so quick to say that they necessarily think that this is a good idea. But it is something that has been discussed inside BRICS. And of course, there is internal trade that they're trying to settle, not in dollars. In other words, the theory, even if it's not an actual thing at the moment, is for BRICS to start to create a rival financial and diplomatic infrastructure for the rest of the world that they can build outside of the institutions that are led by the Americans and the democracies in the world. And that's really sort of the idea. BRICS, you've got this BRICS bank, you've got all of these other kinds of things that they're trying to do to create an alternative set of institutions. And what Trump has done is he has tweeted this thing out that says that if the BRICS countries start to go in this fashion and start to drive this kind of agenda, then he's going to sort of put up tariffs across the board. Of course, this would likely target China, but also Russia. And of course, we would get caught in this particular fight because we would be part of that. And we have a number of trade deals that we're busy negotiating. There's this issue of AGOA, which is up for renegotiation, the African Growth and Opportunities Act, which gives us a preferential trade access to America. But there's other trade, just in general, that doesn't necessarily fall under AGOA that would be affected should this go. And so you can see Trump's strategy of threatening tariff increases, etc., across the board, starting to be see where we're going to be cut in. And of course, as we've noted on the show before, South Africa does have a uniquely bad set of foreign policy credentials here. We've got the issue of the ICJ running, which is annoying to many of the security people that Trump has put in, almost all of them, in fact. there is the question of Cuba, which is a particular problem for this the Secretary of State, who is Marco Rubio, who is an ex-Cuban exile in Florida. You've got the question of Iran, which people like Mike Waltz, who's the National Security Advisor, is very upset about. Obviously, South Africa's engagement with Russia, where we allegedly sold arms to the Russians under the cloak of darkness in Simonstown. And then, of course, there was there's the question of China, and we've been doing things like trying to push the Taiwanese consulate out of Pretoria and into Johannesburg. And so all of these things are almost designed for South Africa to take a bit of a clap when it comes to some of these tariff issues. And now we're sucked up into this BRICS debate as well. Now, if you watch what's going on Twitter, South Africans are like doing big on the bravado stuff, right? They're like, oh, well, you know, the Americans can't tell us what to do and blah, blah, blah. And it's not very much in line with what we like to term this non-alignment. Actually, South Africa is very much aligned against the West, aligned against Israel, and it's starting to show. And we're even sort of starting to have issues in our own region. In next door in Mozambique, there's basically an election which was not free and fair, which has resulted in violence and issues, and this is causing chaos all over the place, and that's a big destabilizing factor which we have to be concerned about. The old ruling party of Botswana got swept out of power a few months ago. There's a election in Namibia where SWAPO, which is the former liberation movement of Namibia, is definitely under pressure, where we need to still see if they get taken out or not. And of course, the ANC having to share power with the DA and other parties and part of the GNU as well. So all of this is contributing to South Africa having a more hostile neighborhood in terms of its political allies, but also have a more hostile foreign policy. And unfortunately, so far, we haven't seen much proper engagement from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. Very little coming out on Mozambique. More importantly, we have Ronald Lamola saying, well, you don't really need the West. They're an important partner, but actually we're diversifying our foreign policy positions. That kind of talk is not going to get us anywhere. We need to start finding ways to engage the Americans, show them that we're serious about diplomacy. And that sort of thing is going to help ameliorate the idea in American minds that we are implacably opposed to their agenda, and that whilst we are not going to necessarily, as South Africans, do whatever the Americans want, if we keep operating as a risk to their key interests, they are going to act accordingly, especially under this presidency, and that could be disastrous for all of us. So that is where we are on foreign policy. I'm Benji Shulman. This is 101.9 Hi FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
I am Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Hi FM. And we're chatting today about some of the things that are helping to make the world go around, the cultural and current affairs show. Now, water issues are increasingly becoming a problem in South Africa. I saw a graph just the other day that said, it was like showing different countries in and around the world that are going to be facing water scarcity problems, serious ones in the next decade. And between us, Namibia, a couple of other Southern African countries, we're very much up on that list. So it's a very, very concerning development, and made more concerning by the fact that water is not only a function of dams and rain, it's also a function of how the water is used. And as a result, we have problems in our city because it's not being run properly. And as a result, people don't have water for weeks, sometimes on end. And this is across the city. It's not just in the townships, suburban areas, small holding areas, whatever. Really, wherever you are, you're affected by this as a problem. So this is a real question and a real challenge. And it requires us to think through what are our water challenges and how can we start to address them. And there's a great report was actually written a few years ago, but it's worth reading now because it does a very good job of showing the overall situation of our water crisis. And it's called Thirsty Lands, and it's by the Institute for Race Relations, and they conducted this report to look at best practices in terms of water. And what they found is that there's a few things that one can do to really deal with water crises, but it's not a short-term fix. You've got to really put in the investment and the time and the effort to create proper water structures. And so I thought let's go through some of them, because obviously we discuss, you know, in the media you'll hear something about, well, you know, there's no water or it's dry or this reservoir or that, but this actually gives us a chance to kind of zoom out and really look at what is going on in a general sense. So the first thing, actually, as it always is in South Africa, is that we have a water governance problem, right? So the way that you have our water done in South Africa, it's done off a public model, which means effectively it's run by the state, and each region has its own kind of water boards, including for cities. So you've got like Rand Water, Joburg Water, there's water in Durban, there's a Cape Town Water. So those are water authorities whose job it is to get bulk water supply into homes, into factories, into various other places, and they have to work together. And unfortunately, what we've seen is a process by which a lot of a lot of other issues going on in South Africa have also affected the Water Authority. There was basically ministers that had been complicit, according to the Zondo Commission, in the Zuma era. Those were water ministers on water boards, and the water was being used as a cash cow for cater deployment, not for water deployment. And this has been a big issue, because even in the city of Johannesburg, which used to have water engineers and people with other appropriate qualifications looking at the situation, now you've got people who are part of the ANC Youth League who are on those boards, and that's causing a lot of problems. So there's an issue around that. In addition, you have that, and then as a result you've got water deficits in terms of infrastructure development. So you need to maintain these things, particularly issues like sewerage, right? So if you're in the heart of Beersport and all these sorts of places, and you see that horrible green muck that's hyacinth that's growing on the dams, that has to do with the fact that there is basically sewage being dumped into those water sources, and as a result, those plants are feeding off of that and creating this environment. So those things need to be maintained. And if you were to look at the amount of money which it would require to actually fix all of our water issues, it comes up to something like 900 billion rand. So nearly a trillion rands worth of infrastructure that has to be dealt with in terms of getting water supply back up and running. Now, the disturbing thing is that the government's budget for fixing water supplies, or even just running water supplies to begin with, is 90 million rand a year. In other words, one tenth of what we need to fix the problem is available in running costs every year. So there's no way that government can do this. And what you're going to need to do is then get private sector involvement at some level in fixing the water system. Now, that becomes complicated because private sector is interested in profit and they want to make money. And water is one of those things which you need to provide, whether, you know, if people can pay for it. It's not something, one of those things where you can just say, well, you're just not, people are not going to be able to drink. So that becomes complicated. But at the same time, if it's only government involvement, then no one's going to have any water anyway because there's just no provision for it. So you've got to find a balance between the two. And that brings us to the question of pricing. So in South Africa, we have a system where water is priced pretty cheaply. But in addition, there is also free certain amounts of free water that are made available to those who need it, either through taps, individual taps, or on household budgets where the first amount of water is free. But water pricing is actually something which has been used successfully in other places, including in Israel, as a way of just making it an important commodity that people use wisely. So if you know that washing your car on a Sunday with a hose pipe is in fact going to result in the fact that you then have a water bill that costs the entire car, that is going to be something of a deterrent for you to be doing that sort of thing going forward. And so pricing water properly and appropriately is very important. But also then connected to that is the question of water, which they call there's a technical term that they use, unfinanced water. It's not quite right. It's gone out of my head. I apologize. But basically, it's water that you can't get money for because it's not being used properly. It's being lost. Okay, so that's typically from things like leaks or people breaking into the system, or whatever. But leaks are a big issue, right? In a place like Johannesburg, you have leakages of water that comes into the city of 40 or 50%, and so simply you dealing with the leaks that we have and actually using the water appropriately makes a huge difference in terms of how it gets to the people who actually need it. Because if it's all just sinking into the ground, that becomes a very serious problem. And fixing leaks is difficult because it's underground, you don't know where they are, and you have to sort of have technologies available to track the water, see where it's going, and then check the leaks, and then go and fix them. And of course, the other thing which is connected to leaks is the question of what kind of water are you using, right? So by far the largest consumer of water in South Africa and in general is always in agriculture, which makes a lot of sense. The plants are very thirsty; they need water, but they don't always need full grade water, right? You don't need drinking quality water for crops. And again, what Israel has done really well is that they've been able to recycle their water. It's like about 90% of their water usage, and that recycled water actually goes onto crops now. It's a delicate balance. You need to check and see what's going on, because obviously you don't want to take vectors and infections from the water supply and put it on things. So, for example, fruits are better than vegetables because fruits grow through the trees, and the trees are more resistant to pathogens and that kind of thing than our vegetables, which are very close to the ground and have a small kind of green foliage and can take the infections directly into the fruits, into the vegetables. So watering orchards is actually much more effective with recycled water. But if you recycle water properly, first of all, you can reuse it in crops, but you can also reuse it in other parts of the system. And that is something that we have stopped doing. If we were recycling our water properly, you could then actually just put it into the river system. And the river system would take care of it because it's already been cleaned. So, for example, they're having this problem in Pretoria because in Pretoria there is a drinking water facility on the river which can clean river water and make it up to drinking water standard. But the problem is because further up the road in a place called Rooival, which is supposed to clean the sewage, that hasn't been operating for a while. And as a result, they are sending basically raw sewage into the river, and the drinking water facility can't cope with that. And so you have two facilities which are now not providing the kind of water which they actually could if some other parts of the system were working. So that is just some of the issues that we're seeing in the water sector. If you want to get deeper into this, I do suggest this dry lands report or thirsty lands report from the IRR. It will give you a very good overview about the water situation and help you stay informed about what is going on. That is on the water side of things. I hope that you find that interesting. Now, I did promise to talk about drones as well for the show today. And it's very, very interesting. So drones obviously are a part of life now, and they get used in many, many different facets of life. And the problem is they're small. They can be launched by virtually anyone. You don't need any real piloting experience, and they go up in the air. And if you're a commercial airline or a military airline or anything, you risk being hit by these drones or drones into one another. And so there was this project that was started in Israel a number of years ago to start trying to see how you can coordinate these things. How do you put the logistics in? Can you put flight paths? How do you identify the drones? How do you make sure that they are operational? And they started doing some sort of testing of the drones to see how they might be able to work in different capacities and different settings. And this is very interesting. So they did two things. The one was a pizza delivery to someone's house via a drone, and just to test what that might look like. And the other one was a kind of unmanned vehicle for hospital evacuation. So sort of if you picked up someone who had been injured and you took them from the battlefield, say, to a hospital, you could do that in an unmanned drone. And they were testing this to see what would the logistics look like and certainly what the cost would be, because to deliver pizzas, for example, it would be a real challenge in a residential block, because there's lots of people there and this thing would have to buzz around a house continuously until it could drop it in there. And so one of the ways that they tried to deal with this problem was to actually have the drones deliver at a central point, and then the pickup came from there. But there's all sorts of things that you have to look at in order to make this safe. And with the war in Israel, this program that had really been just a cluster of different drone manufacturers coming together to talk and engage on how to get this together has actually really spurned, and they had to move really quickly because suddenly you've got lots of military drones in the sky. And so the Israelis, as well as a number of other countries, Switzerland is trying to do it, I think Australia as well, they're all trying to find ways in which we can eventually have drones safely and effectively moving around our skies, doing work that we're going to need them to do without causing absolute chaos. So there's a very interesting article in the Times of Israel, if you want to go and have a look at it, about the issues of pizza delivery drones and all of these other drone networks that are being developed as part of the kind of, I guess, the same way as we think of the internet today, right? An infrastructure that facilitates things happening. This is something that has to actually be developed for the drones. So, yeah, it's interesting, and we're going to be continuing to cover it. Drones are not going anywhere. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 High FM.